email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Ciara McGeehan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You're just fresh from Coe Park. You were over there as an ambassador for Lidl Ireland, who are the sponsors of the Ladies Gaelic Football Tournament.
Yes.
All went well?
It was fantastic. It was fantastic to be on the hallowed turf. Oh, you're not allowed on the grass, but it was lovely to be there and to be able to celebrate the year that's passed in Ladies Gaelic football, but also look forward to an amazing 2025 and really celebrate all things women's sports. So, yeah.
And even you weren't allowed on the grass.
No, it seems to be you have to be gladiator to get on that pitch. For sure. I touched it.
Did you?
But I'm fairly, the lovely lady who was in charge of us all was like, if anybody goes on that, it's my job on the line.
Did she say that?
So yeah, the grass is, honestly, it's kept in tip-top shape and you have to be playing in Croke Park to get touching it.
Right. Congratulations. We'll be talking more about women in sport, but first, on a personal note, yourself and your longtime partner, Thomas, got engaged.
Yes, we did indeed. Thank you
very much.
When
and how and...
New Year's Eve, we were actually down visiting. I'm very good friends with Thomas's sister and his
brother-in-law. Where's he from originally?
Tommy's from Meath. He's from Kells. But Kieran and Shauna live down in Bird Hill. I know that where they live is on the border with Tip, Clare and Limerick. And I am not going to say which county because I'm not going to get there in because I don't want to get in trouble. But we were down with them in Bird Hill and we were just having a nice wee relaxing day. God love Thomas. He had it all planned. We were going to go out for lunch and have a walk along the Shannon. And then true to form, the Irish weather got in the way. So it was actually just a lovely little intimate moment with me and Thomas in the house in front of the Christmas tree with Bobby, who's Kieran and Shauna's dog, who was the dog that lived in our student house. So has been there throughout our entire relationship. And you know, it was nice because I think throughout my life, my sport is on the stage, it's on the track, it's in front of cameras, in the limelight. And I'll be honest, some of my happiest moments are those intimate moments when it's just a quiet little chat in a room with just us. So yeah, it was a beautiful moment.
And Thomas is a runner as well.
He is, yeah.
And he seems to have been your rock through a lot of ups and downs over the years.
Most certainly, yeah. Tommy's a good athlete himself. We met in UCD. He was coached by Jerry Kiernan, just the same as me. And I would be lost without Thomas. I honestly can say hand on heart, without Thomas this summer, I would never have won that European gold medal. Both Thomas and a really good friend, Jip Vastenberg, who was a teammate from Team New Balance Manchester. She's retired and back in the Netherlands now. But both her and Thomas basically coached me through this summer. They were... the people keep me steady, and yeah, I'm very fortunate to have a partner like Tommy.
And would you run against him?
Against Thomas?
Yeah.
No, he would beat me hands down.
Would
I
he?
Will. Yes, yeah. Thomas is much faster than me, hence why he's been able to be my pacemaker for the past few seasons. So
you do run against him, but as a pacemaker.
He's the one setting the pace, and yes. I hold on for dear life. Tommy's a sub 4 minute miler,
right.
Which is a time that I could only dream of. My mile PB is well off that. He's a handy runner himself.
Yeah,
he is.
Yeah.
He gets a discredit because he's in my shadow just because of my achievements on the track. But he's fairly good himself.
So it was June in Rome,
yes.
The European Championships. Do you want to hear that again? Would you like to hear it?
Look.
Yeah,
it's
come
a
on.
Nice
sure,
memory.
Why not? For our listeners, put on the headphones there and we'll play it through. And the commentary is by our own Greg Allen.
Ciara McGeehan has the ability to go and sprint. And is she going to sprint for gold? She's in a medal position. Guillemot of France in fourth place, threatening these top three. Ciara McGeehan, can she go? In front of her is Georgia Bell. In front of her is Gemma Reekie. And they're all going hard. But a little bit of a boxed-in situation here. And she needs to find a gap. Can she find a gap? She needs to burst her way through. She has burst her way through. And Ciara McGeehan's in the gold medal position. And Georgia Bell is fading. And Guillemot is fading. And it's going to be Ciara McGeehan's gold medal. She is doing it. She is adding gold to the silver and bronze. And gold it is. The full set of medals for Ciara McGeehan.
What a wonderful memory, Ciara.
It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It always makes me laugh because I know Greg has been there through many a championship for me. He's been behind the scenes, seen me in far sadder occasions than that, and it makes me laugh because I could imagine how excited he was commentating.
He sounded like he was invested in it.
Yeah, it's funny. He was like, I was trying not to be too make that too obvious, but no, it's lovely. I don't think I'll ever get sick of listening to that.
And you're two UK runners. I remember watching it and going, oh no.
Look, it was not a perfect race on my part. I should never have went up the inside and got boxed in. Whenever I finished the race and I came off and chatted to Thomas, he was like, well, you got your tactics wrong. And I was like, I have the European gold medal. Like, Tommy's a tough critic. But when I went back and watched the race, I was like, I was spot on. I should not have taken that inside line. I should never have been boxed in. But look.
And what are the rules around pushing off people? Now, I don't think there was any contact in that, was there?
You're not allowed to physically shove. Right. The middle distance racing is probably one of the main races in athletics where there is a bit of contact. It's hard over the 800 and the 15 not to have some sort of touching. So you will end up meeting people on the way. You'll have to assert your place on the track, but yeah, you're not allowed to physically tackle somebody out of it.
Right. So how does one assert one's place then?
you hold firm, and as I said, I think the Camogie Association was delighted. I didn't grow up in Portaferry playing Camogie to get boxed in on an athletics track.
Right,
so whenever I saw a little bit of light, I moved forward ever so slightly, and listen, that just opened up, and the rest is history.
For us mere mortals, who will never win a gold medal at the local sports day, never mind the European Championship, what is it like in a stadium and, that final 10 metres where you know it's gold?
Cheers. Yeah. Honestly, it feels like you're on air, just running on air. I felt like that track could have kept lasting and I would never have minded. The race could have kept, continued on another 100 metres and I would have been A-OK with that. Yeah. And I'd say in that moment when I crossed the line, it was sheer ecstasy. There was probably a mix of emotions, just that happiness that it was finally mine, but also nearly like a relief that finally it was mine. I've been here for a long time.
Yes.
I've had the highs and lows. I've had my bronze and my silver, and finally the gold was mine. And as well, like, the Irish are amazing sports fans.
And what a year, 2024. And let's hope it wasn't our best year. Let's hope we build and build. And I think we are going to build, particularly in women's athletics, aren't we?
Definitely. Whenever you look at where we have come from, where we're going, the crop of athletes that we have coming through. Look, I'm one of the older athletes on the team now at 32. The rest of the athletes are all much younger than me. So Irish athletics is in very safe hands.
Yeah.
And look, I'm delighted to say the women are really at the forefront. We're up there flying the flag, but it's across all sports. Whenever you look at how our sports people are doing, it was an amazing year of sport for Ireland and a fantastic year for Irish women in sport.
So I know you don't like talking about it, but we have to talk about the Olympics. So let's do it this way then. So you had surgery on your left ankle for a bone spur.
Yes.
How long ago was that?
That was when I was in uni in UCD. Okay. So I was maybe 20 at the time. So I'd say 2012.
Right.
2012 is probably the date.
And then about 8 years ago, you realised that the same was happening with your right foot.
Yeah, it wasn't long actually after the first surgery that I was like, oh, this right leg is starting to get a little bit achy, but it was only very slight.
But you recognised the symptoms.
Yeah, I knew it was the same. I knew it was the same. And
it's a sort of a growth of bone, is it?
Yeah, it could be described as a combination of things. So a Hyglund's deformity is the bone just being a bit deformed, and your calcaneus, the bone in your heel. But I also had a few little bone spurs, so little anomalies of sharp section coming out. And that was ultimately what was causing me the issue.
And if you, Ciarán McGeoin, weren't a world-class runner, you could have lived your life without knowing that.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Most certainly. There's many of us that are probably going around asymptomatic, which means you don't have any symptoms. It's the same with, as people like to refer to as discs in the back. Some people have symptomatic pain whenever a disc is giving them issue in their back. And other people could walk about with the exact same thing and have no pain at all. Pain is just such an unusual thing and how the body feels it.
But it's a message, isn't it? To
most
that
certainly.
There's something wrong.
Yeah. And like my mummy could have the exact same thing, but she isn't out on the track pushing her body to the absolute max. So she would never find out necessarily that that's in her heels. Unfortunately for me.
What's your relationship with pain?
Oh,
as an elite athlete?
I'd say we have a love-hate relationship, the pair of us. I'm more than happy to go into a world of pain. It's something that I can tolerate to a very high level, maybe more than I should. Hence why I've put myself in the position that I've been in. There's a certain love of it, a love of pushing yourself to that limit. Whenever anybody who has competed in sport or knows that feeling of running so hard that you can nearly like taste that irony taste in your mouth.
I read that blood in your mouth.
It literally tastes like blood in your mouth. And you're even at the moment, I'm in the gym and I'm cross training and I am pushing myself to the max. And I finish on the cross trainer and I'm like, okay, right. Well, I'm proud that I did that. I'm happy that
you're
I
spent.
Could push myself. Yeah. And there's a certain joy in pushing your body to that limit. But unfortunately, whenever it becomes a pain that's no longer helpful, it's difficult and it's hard to step back.
There's a point then where the actual joint or wherever can't function. Is that it? So it can function through pain, and then at some stage it just goes, no, sorry.
Yeah, your body has enough. Unfortunately for me, I've been tolerating this right ankle. So I had surgery on the left in uni and it did a great job. But the right ankle I've been tolerating for 8+ years now. And don't get me wrong, there's times that I've sat on the stairs at home and thought, I don't know if I can keep doing this. I honestly thought it might result in my retirement from the sport. And I've had to manage it in so many different ways. Icing, anti-inflams to try to settle the bursa down. I've had to adjust training hugely. I've had to cross train instead of running. I've tried everything that I could conservatively to try to get that ankle in a place that it could work. The World Champs last year, I came fourth.
Yes.
This ankle was the same ankle. Just unfortunately for me.
And it was the same ankle in Rome last year in June when you won the gold medal.
That's exactly it. And I was in a lot of pain before heading into Rome. I had a Diamond League and not long after Rome, I was in agony hobbling around the hotel. Most people probably wouldn't realise that on my warm-ups I'm in pain. I just have this ability to switch it off once the adrenaline goes. But unfortunately, right before the Olympic Games, I had my last key session, the same the type of session that I would do before any major champs. I know some people probably thought, did she do something silly? No. I did what you have to do when you're going into the Olympic Games. But
and how close to it was your first race that you had to say no? Was it the day before? Or
yeah, it was the day before. Yeah. So had
all your family travelled over?
Yes, they had. And I'll be honest, I'd been battling with it for a while, but kept it private. Just Thomas and Yip really knew that the ankle was in a really bad way. I flew into the village. So whenever the training session that I would say it ultimately gave, I had my sports psych was there as well. And so I contacted my sports doc. He arranged me to have an MRI up in Samaritz. I had the MRI sent off the results and I was advised to fly in earlier to Paris to get seen in the village. So flew into Paris, chatted with all of our medical team there, had 2 cortisone injections into the heel, which I had been, I was well aware were some options, but for the past 8 years were never something I was allowed to do because of the risk associated with the health of the tendon. But when you're 2 weeks are shy of 2 weeks outside of the Olympic Games.
There's going to be your third Olympic Games. Yeah. That's a big thing.
You take that risk.
And you're on form. You've a European gold medal in your back pocket.
Yeah.
Fourth in the World Championships in Budapest. So it's all stacking up.
Yeah, it's risk reward at that time. Yes. You think, right, I'm going to take that. So I had the 2 injections and unfortunately they just didn't relieve the pain. And it got to the stage where it was just so painful I couldn't properly run. And
do you consider other people then? You know, because your family had travelled over, they've spent, you know, they're staying in hotels, there's money involved, you know, there's expectation there. What goes through your head about that part of it?
That's probably one of the parts that breaks my heart the most. I had said to my family at this Olympics, I didn't want to know too much about all of their prep going in, because I in many ways feel a huge amount of guilt just because of the sheer expense of travelling to watch me race, that my parents we don't have a massive family income. It takes a lot of money to fly over to Paris. I knew that the Olympic Games, the tickets alone were really expensive because I was trying my best to try to help them.
Did you not get four?
You do. You're guaranteed 2 tickets to each round that you're in. And I was like, okay, so every round I get into, I have 2. But I'm from a family of 6. I'm 1 of 6. And my Aunt Adele has been following me for races all around the world since I was starting in this sport. And it's funny, Tommy has now qualified to be in one of those people that would get that ticket. So I'm there. Tommy's bought his tickets to the game. There's a lot of expense goes into it, but also just I suppose for me, this was the first time that my family had got to travel to an Olympics. My first Olympics were in Rio. It was a little far away.
Then Japan.
Then Japan, and nobody was able to go to Tokyo. And so this was in Paris, the closest Olympics we'll really get. And I thought, this is my mommy and daddy's chance to see their little girl race in Olympic Games. I'm going to well up and
no,
cry.
No, but because it was all building up to this, wasn't it? That can't have escaped you.
Oh, no. And ringing them. So actually, before withdrawn, the week that things were going a bit rough and I was in Paris, I met my family for some food. I messaged them, I was like, can we grab some food? And they probably knew something was up because I wouldn't usually go and meet them before racing. And I sat down and told them, like, you know, things aren't going so good. My ankle's not looking good. And I don't know if I'm going to get to race. I don't know. And I cried and my siblings cried and my mommy and daddy just gave me a big hug. And my daddy's he can seem like he has a hard exterior, but he's a big softy inside and just put his arm around me and give me a kiss on my head. And I'll get emotional chatting about it. But like I know for them, it's just really hard because they just want to see me happy.
Yeah.
And
of course,
whether that's winning a medal or not, they really don't want to see me in pain, and they most certainly don't want to see me cry.
Okay, so out the other side then, and you had surgery in September, and you're in rehab now, or recuperation or whatever, physio. Whereabouts are you? Because it's supposed to be 6 months before you can run again, is it?
Yes.
So that's what, September to March, April?
Yeah, so we're like looking on four or five months post-op now. I've went through all of the early doors rehab where I had to keep my foot elevated for 50 minutes of every hour.
50 minutes of every hour?
Yeah. So 10 minutes able to toddle about, go to the toilet, but the rest of it, my foot elevated to keep the swelling down.
What'd you do with, how'd you handle that with the boredom of it all?
I'd say there was a good few packets of Pringles out and there was a lot of TV watched. Right. I probably could have used that time a lot more wisely, but I'll be honest, the mental headspace I was in at that moment was just one of just
escapism.
Yeah.
Pringles and Netflix. Yeah.
That was it. So we're all guilty of indulging in that sense. And then whenever I was allowed, I got back training. I had to let the wound completely heal over. And currently now I'm cross training flat out. I'm training as normal as I can without being able to run. I'm not allowed to run just yet. I'm flying to Manchester tomorrow to meet my physio, Chris, who's been my physio for the past number of years. And thanks to him knowing everything about me, I was like, can you get me through this this operation rehab? So I'm going over and I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that Chris will tell me that I'll be able to run in the next few weeks. That's what I'm hoping.
And there's World Championships in September in Tokyo.
Yes, that's the big aim.
That's the big aim.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. You mentioned your auntie Adele, and she was there from the start. And she was a woman in sport for you.
Yes.
You know, a role model, a real role model, was she?
Oh, yes. I feel very fortunate in life. I think whenever we talk about female role models, I think as Irish people, we're very lucky. Many of an Irish family has been had a woman at the head of the family. We all usually have a matriarch at the head of our families. My granny was that very person for us. So I feel like throughout life, I had an amazing role model in my granny and my mummy. But I'm also very fortunate in sport to have had a female role model since I was a tiny wee tot. So my aunt Adele played for Portaferry and Down, and then she transferred and played for Dunloy and Antrim. We travelled all over the country to watch her play. So from I was no age, I was looking through the fence of a Camogie field watching my auntie Adele out playing. She used to go down and practice her frees and 45s and her sideline cuts, and me and my sister Myra would come down and hit the ball back. So from a young age, I knew that girls played sport. I knew that they went out and got mucky and sweaty, and that they tackled hard, and that they were fierce and competitive, and that that was what it was to be a sportswoman. And I feel very lucky because I certainly didn't see that on TV, and I didn't see it in very many other aspects. But at home, my auntie was that. My dad always spoke about how much fantastic Camogie player she was. In our house, it wasn't unusual to hear about a Camogie player and how fantastic they were. So I was well aware that women could excel in sport.
And you're a role model, and all the amazing athletes that we saw last year are all role models as well. And if you can't see it, you can't be it. And the world is changing before our eyes, isn't it, for female sports people?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And the research that Lidl did, it was insightful. It was in some ways reassuring that whenever we looked, one in four people now can name a female sports person. That's fantastic. That certainly wasn't the case 10 years ago. But it also was insightful.
Well, Sonia O'Sullivan would argue that point.
Most certainly. I feel like Sonia was a name on everybody's lips.
Yes,
but
yes, yeah.
Now I feel like there's a handful that
there
people
is,
come,
yes,
can
yeah,
name.
Yeah.
But we still have a long way to go. And it's something that I hope that all of us can continue to move the dial on. And that's in every household, that's getting out to watch girls' games. That's talking about amazingly strong women, using those terms to describe the women in your life, the strong, fierce women that can fight. And look, if we can continue
to do it.
I won't get boxed in. Yeah. Certainly not.
Ciara McGeehan, good luck with your recovery from your surgery. And Ciara is an ambassador for Lidl Ireland. And we'll be looking out for you in Tokyo in September. Thanks very much, Ciara.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.